All right, good morning. It's good to be here with you this morning. My name's Ben. How's everyone doing? Yeah, good. That's good. I started here as a student minister this year when I moved up from Wollongong with my wife, Soph, and our one-year-old, Reuben. We love going to explore new cafes in Surry Hills and then finding a spot to take Reuben to a new park so we can actually drink the coffee in peace. That's our favourite activity. We've loved getting to know you guys, particularly our community group. Particularly Andrew, Bron, Michelle, Andy, Stephen, Viana and Peter, those guys, it's been so good getting to know some of them. We've laughed, we've cried, we've spent time praying for each other when times have been tough, and we've encouraged each other to trust Jesus more. And so that's been a really special moment to join church and join a community group. That's a free plug. If you're not in a community group, can I encourage you to get in one? They're awesome. And the other week, I was over at the Tap House just across the road having a beer with a few friends. Now, one of them was a social media strategist for craft beer. One of them was a writer. One of them was a beer reviewer. They were all cool kind of craft beer guys, and I felt intimidated, right? We were sitting there relaxing over a beer, talking about craft beer, and one of them asked me, "What do you do for work?" I'm studying at Bible College full-time, and I'm working here part-time at Vine Church. And so you thought I'd knock that question out of the park, right? What do you do for work? But I felt awkward. Here we go. I thought a bunch of craft beer guys sitting at the pub, they're not going to want to hear about Jesus. They'll probably think I'm stupid or wasting my own time or dangerous. Now, have you guys ever felt that? The awkwardness when conversations about faith come up at work or wherever you are? See, sometimes it can feel like God's on the way out here in Sydney. Got slides? There we go. The National Church Life Survey, who surveyed a bunch of people in Australia, they found that over 63% of people are over the age of 50 who go to church. That's those kind of right two columns there. And less than 25% of people surveyed believe in a personal God. That's the blue bit of that circle, that top right quadrant. Let alone the subset of that 25% who believe in Jesus as their personal God. See, religion seems to be on the decline here in Sydney. How can we be confident witnesses for Jesus in our cultural moment? A Sydney artist I follow, Struthless, just started up this podcast called God is Dead. He talks about how his experiences in Sydney lead him to believe that there is no God, or if there is one, he's very irrelevant. And lots of people in Sydney that I talk to think something similar to that. In our climate, how can we be confident to witness to Jesus? That's the question the book of Acts asks and answers. See, we celebrated Easter last week, and Acts picks up the events that happened after that first Easter 2,000 years ago. You can imagine Jesus' first followers, how they would have been feeling. The Romans just killed Jesus at the request of the Jewish religious leaders. They must have been freaking out. What are they going to do to me as a follower of Jesus? And we're about to start a six-week series in Ecclesiastes designed for us to bring our friends to. And in our cultural climate is people doing podcasts about God being dead. How can we be confident witnesses for Jesus? See, the book of Acts shows us how the ripples of the gospel spread out throughout the world, from Jerusalem to the ends of the earth. Jesus' death and resurrection are like a stone thrown into a calm lake. The ripples have been spreading out throughout all of history. And Luke, the author, he wants to give them and us three reasons why we can be confident to share and witness about Jesus. He really is risen, he really is ascended, and he really has given us his Spirit. So that's where we're going this morning. Firstly, Jesus really is risen. Luke was a doctor. He wrote Acts as part two of his earlier work, the book of Luke. He wasn't very creative in the naming department. We get a summary of Luke in verse 1 to 2. See it there with me. He says, "In my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all that Jesus began to do and to teach until the day he was taken up to heaven after giving instructions through the Holy Spirit to the apostles he had chosen. See, Luke, he spent 2 years going up and down Palestine, interviewing eyewitnesses about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. He wasn't willing to believe a lie, so he went searching for truth. And he says in verse 3, after his suffering, he presented himself to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. This begs a question for us this morning, doesn't it? Have you looked at the proofs for Jesus seriously as an adult? So you won't find a credible historian today who denies that Jesus was a real person who really did live and die in Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. This is N.T. Wright. He's a New Testament scholar, and he wrote this 740-page chunky book. It's fat, right? It's called The Resurrection of the Son of God. And he argues there are two main questions that any historian must face concerning Jesus' resurrection. Firstly, what happened with Jesus' body? The Romans couldn't have taken the body. They killed Jesus to quell an uprising. And if the body had gone missing, that would have been the last thing that they had wanted. If they or the Jewish leaders had have had the body, they would have produced it when the claims came out about Jesus' resurrection. And the early Christians, they died for this claim that Jesus really was risen and the body wasn't there. If they'd have had it, surely at some point, someone would have cracked and said this whole thing was made up. But they didn't. And secondly, lots of people claim to see Jesus post-resurrection, not just his closest followers. So the letter of 1 Corinthians, which was widely in circulation less than 20 years after Jesus' death, in that letter, Paul, the author, claims that Jesus appeared to crowds of 500 people and then 4,000. Big crowds, crowds that couldn't have made this up. Professor Ed Sanders, here he is, he's a historian and an agnostic at Duke University in America. He says that Jesus' followers and later Paul had resurrection appearances is, in my judgment, a fact. What the reality was that gave rise to the experiences, I do not know. His response is typical to the way historians approach Easter. They're compelled to say there was these post-resurrection experiences, but they can't explain what they were, especially if they don't believe in the miraculous. There's two bits of evidence for you to check out: the missing body and the post-resurrection experiences. If you haven't checked them out, you should investigate them. They're worth investigating. But I want to ask, why does the resurrection matter for you and for me? The resurrection claim is everything because it gives us hope in the face of death. See, death lays a claim over each one of us. Death is the great opponent of hope. We will all die one day, but Jesus' death and resurrection show us that death is not the end. A close family friend of mine passed away last year after suffering from motor neuron disease. It's a horrible disease. It shuts off your body's systems one by one until you just can't function anymore. She was only in her 50s. She was married. She had four kids, and just had the first grandkids. And it was tragic to be at her funeral. I was sitting next to my mum watching her cry. I was tearing up. I was seeing her kids down the front, just devastated. It was a devastating experience to be there. But the feeling in the air at that funeral, it wasn't hopelessness. See, for them, death was not the end. Because Jesus rose from the grave, one day he will rise my friend Cecily from the grave. That's the center of the Christian message. That Jesus died and rose again, a real person at a real point in history. And he brings hope. Hope that there is life after death for each of us who will trust him. Hope that there is eternity with God on offer. Hope that this mum would one day be reunited with her family, and on that day there'd be no more pain or sadness or loss. Isn't that such great news, the hope that Jesus brings? And that's why Christians want the world to know Jesus. They want people to have a genuine hope in the face of death. That's why our message has spread across the world like a ripple on a calm lake. We can't keep it to ourselves. It's worth sharing, isn't it? We should be confident to witness to Jesus because he really is risen and there really is hope, which Sydney needs to hear. Secondly, we should be confident to witness about Jesus because Jesus ascended to heaven. His resurrection begs the question, right? From the book of Acts in chapter 1, we see that he's not just wandering around on earth somewhere. See, the book of Acts is sometimes called the Acts of the Apostles. But really, it's the Acts of Jesus, risen and ascended to heaven, seated on his throne, directing troops around like a general directs a battle. That's who Jesus is. See, look at verse 9 with me. After he said this, talking about Jesus, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. They were looking intently up into the sky as he was going, when suddenly two men dressed in white stood beside them. "Men of Galilee," they said, "why do you stand here looking into the sky? This same Jesus who has been taken from you into heaven will come back in the same way you have seen him go into heaven." So we read this and we go, that's a bit weird, isn't it? He's taken up out of sight on a cloud. But Luke's audience here would have understood and been familiar with the Old Testament. And they would have understood the writings and the powerful image that comes out of this passage from the book of Daniel. See, Daniel was an Israelite exiled in Babylon in the 6th century. His country was destroyed. He was under the tyrannical rule of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon. And while he's there, he has this vision of a king who will come and overthrow tyrants. And that king's called the Son of Man. He'll be given all authority and power and glory, and he'll rule the world. But he won't rule as a tyrant like these other 6th century kings, abusing his power. He'll rule with justice and mercy. See, this is what Daniel 7 says in verse 13. "In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed." So the Ancient of Days, that was a title for God. And this is a prophecy about Jesus' ascension. See, Jesus is the king who rose from the dead and he ascends to heaven on a cloud. He's taken up to the throne room of God where he'll rule with all power, authority, and glory. The king who doesn't rule as a tyrant but comes to bring peace between us and God. See, Jesus has a mission. He wants to bring peace to this world between us and God. And it starts here at his ascension. See, Richard Johnson was the first chaplain to Australia. Here he is. He came over on a ship in 1786, and boy, he did not receive a friendly welcome. The convict colony of New South Wales were not interested in hearing what a chaplain had to say. At one point, Richard thought he was making inroads into the convict colony when they started accepting Bibles from him. But it turned out actually they were just using those Bibles after they'd been to the toilet as toilet paper. And he decided to build a church in 1793, but 5 years later, that church burnt down. 20 years of hard work seemingly down the toilet. Now, what would keep a guy like that going? Well, it's because he knew that Jesus was ascended and in control of everything. He knew that Jesus had sent him as a witness to New South Wales. He was confident in Jesus despite his circumstances. He was expectant that God would be at work despite not seeing the results right in front of him immediately. And he continued that ripple of witnesses to Jesus to the ends of the earth. And you know what? Our church wouldn't be here today without the work of Richard Johnson. The church that was burnt down was rebuilt 5 years later in the early 1800s. And it's called St. Philip's, York Street. Here it is. Here it is in the 1800s. Here it is today with skyscrapers and motorbikes in front of it. It's also called Church Hill Anglican Church. And that church has been continuing to witness to Jesus faithfully over the last 200 years. And 8 years ago, a strapping, good-looking young student minister there by the name of Toby Neal, he was trained there and encouraged to go out and plant a church in Surrey Hills. That's us, Vine Church. All because Richard Johnson persevered in witnessing to Jesus. Jesus is on the throne, so we should be confident. He's in control of this world, directing all of history towards his purposes. And he's directing the events of your life today. As you go to work each morning, do you think God has directed me here today to be a witness to him? Is that what you do at the gym, at school pickup, with your neighbor at the front of your apartment? Are you looking for opportunities to witness Jesus wherever you go? Maybe the thought of that sounds a bit daunting, or you feel a bit lost at the kind of the pressure of that. If that's you or you don't know where to start, I've got 5 suggestions of how we can be a witness for Jesus. You don't have to do all of them this week, but they just might get you thinking and get the ball rolling on how we can be witnesses for Jesus. First one, let them know you're a Christian. It seems pretty obvious, but do the people around you in your life know that you follow Jesus? Do you let them know that you went to church on the weekend when they ask you what you got up to? They might have questions or come to you later when things are hard, but they won't ask those questions if they don't even know that you are a Christian. That's the first one. Secondly, tell them your story. What do you believe and why do you believe it's true? Why does it give you hope? How does it make you feel trusting Jesus? Ask them what they believe, how their life has led them to that point. Be willing to listen, be open and not judgmental. Hearing their story and sharing yours is a great way to start talking about faith. Thirdly, get to know them. Get to know them outside of work or uni or whatever context you're in. If you want to talk about deeper things, go deeper than lunch break conversations. Invite them around for a barbecue. Go out for a footy game or a coffee on the weekend. Introduce them to some of your Christian mates. Get to know them on a deeper level. Fourthly, prayer. Pray for opportunities to share with them. Pray for people you know. Pray for, ask people when they're going through a hard time if you can pray for them. Prayer is so powerful and we often neglect it. Keep praying. And fifthly, invite them to church. Lots of people are curious about church. They've probably never even been in their life. And we're so quick to think they'll say no, we don't even invite them. We put the excuse in their mouth for them. Bring them to hear Al Stewart speak on Ecclesiastes next week on what's the point. What a great opportunity that will be. Make sure you use that, guys. See, if you think you're on your own in your workplace, you won't be confident. You'll be timid and passive. You won't take those opportunities. But if you know that Jesus is seated on the throne, in heaven, in power, if you know that he's directing all of history and he's put you in where you are today to witness to him, what a confidence you'll have to witness Jesus, the ascended Jesus on the throne. And thirdly, we should be confident to witness Jesus because he's given us his Spirit. See in verse 8 with me. But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. See, the disciples want to know when Jesus will restore the physical nation of Israel. But Jesus says, don't worry about that. Think about the bigger picture here. I'm giving you my Spirit in power so that you can be my witnesses throughout the earth. Jesus hasn't left us on our own. He's given us his Spirit. And with his Spirit, you're closer to God right now than anyone who walked with Jesus 2,000 years ago before his death. You've got power in your words as you share the gospel. God is at work through you to change people's hearts that they might trust Jesus. See, have you ever had a close friend or a family member and you've been praying for them and trying to share Jesus with them and invite them along to church? And then you find out another Christian somewhere else that you didn't even know about was also praying for that person and inviting them to their church. They're doing all this work that you had no idea about. See, it's like that with the Spirit, except he's not another person whose work we can't see. It's God at work when we can't see it. See, the Spirit is working to show them that nothing else will satisfy them except for Jesus, the one who truly satisfies. The Spirit's at work in people's hearts, softening them so that they want to hear about Jesus and the hope that he brings. He's the one doing all the heavy lifting here. So you're like a young child helping dad on a Saturday morning with a project on one of those lazy Saturday mornings. He loves you working. He wants you to come and work alongside him. But he's the one doing the work, isn't he? It's not us. It's the Spirit doing that work. It's the same Spirit that gave the disciples confidence to witness Jesus in the face of death. It's the same Spirit that gave Richard Johnson the confidence to persevere in hardship for over 20 years here at the end of the earth in Australia. See, we have that Spirit. That's the source of our confidence this morning. Not our skills in talking about faith or how we might be feeling on any given morning. When you feel awkward or passive, remember that Jesus has put you where he wants you to be and he's given you his Spirit so we can be confident as witnesses for Jesus. Continuing the ripple of witnesses throughout all of history, throughout the whole world from that first moment on the first Easter 2,000 years ago. Today, God wants you to be encouraged, to be confident to witness the risen, ascended Jesus here in Surrey Hills, in your workplace, in your neighborhood. If you've never put your trust in Jesus before, you could put your trust in him today, the risen, ascended Jesus. He'll give you his Spirit, and you'll find hope and life and peace and joy in him that you won't find anywhere else. That's our story, those of us that have put our trust in Jesus. See, Vine Church, we need to be reminded that in our cultural climate here in Surrey Hills, God hasn't forgotten about Sydney. Jesus is ruling and ascended on the throne, sending us out as his Spirit-empowered witnesses. The message of hope and peace that's only found in Jesus is rippling out across our city, changing people's lives. When I feel awkward and scared, that's the truth that I need to remember. I'd love to say that at the tap house, at that conversation with those craft beer guys, that I told them, well, I study the Bible and I work for a church and I'm convinced that Jesus is the ruler and the king of everything. And then they got down on their knees and said, what do I have to do to be saved? But they didn't. That didn't happen. What happened is probably what's happened to you before. I told them that I was a Christian and they were disinterested and quickly changed the topic and moved on. But I trust that God is at work bringing people to himself, so I'll keep praying for those guys. I trust that Jesus is on the throne and they need to know that he's in control, They need to know about the hope that he offers. And he's given me his spirit, so I'll keep sharing him with people in my life. Won't you join me this week out of love to be a witness?